99 came down on the freeway on the wrong side of the highway and was hit. And we were the 14th car that he had passed. And my dad had saw him coming, I guess, and I walked away with no injuries. And my dad lost his life early that morning. My mom never remarried. And I have two older sisters, and she took me to, I'm from Tulare, born and raised in Tulare, and I was raised up in a little Baptist church on the west side of Tulare. And that's where I got my foundation that I kind of fall back on now. But I went to that church until I was old enough to tell her I didn't want to go, and I was about seventh or eighth grade. So I had already had really a spiritual awakening because I was raised up in that, and I knew just what my mom kind of always was teaching me or read to me or what. And when I started drinking and coming home, she would throw some Bible verses at me, and so I always that scared me to death. But anyway, so. I had a spiritual encounter before ever drinking, and that was my first actual touch by alcohol in that manner. My mom never remarried, so everything that I learned was from trial and error, and so luckily I didn't end up in a worse trouble than I did. But I have multiple DUIs. She raised me to work. I'm a worker. And she said, if you want anything, you're going to have to work. And that's the way I was kind of raised. And I could have went. She wanted me to go off to college and do all that. But as I started getting older, I wanted a car. I wanted a girlfriend and all that. I grew up in Tulare. I grew up, they cruised. Everyone cruised cars. So as I grew up, I watched these guys with these fabulous cars, and I wanted one, you know. So at 15, I started working, and I've worked ever since. And so, if anything, one of my good ideals would be I got a pretty good work ethic. I could work my way out of anything, and I did. As I got in trouble drinking and using, I could work my way out of it, and then I would get back into it. So my first DUI was 3 days after my 16th birthday. I was drinking Bacardi 151 at a party. I was didn't have a clue what it was, really. I was just there with my boys trying to be part of and thinking, well, I'll drink that too. And luckily I didn't hit anybody or do anything. They got me off the road, and that was my first DUI. And by the time I was 32, I had a total of 4 DUIs. And so I would work my way out of it. I would work, pay my fines, get it all cleared, and then I it would be almost at that 7-year mark, and boom, I'd get enough. And I got DUIs in the parking lot of Crazy Delvers, never even made it out on the highway. It was like I had a big sign up here that said, DUI, Bradley right here, and got one pulling out of the pump house. I loved the pump house. It was my kind of place. I loved that old bar, but. So by the time I was 32, I had 4 DUIs, and I had learned probably as a senior in high school, I also had a bad case of hangovers. And I got to work. I got to get up. I got to go to work, and they would sideline me, And I was always told if you're gonna play, you gotta pay. So I would get up and go to work no matter what. And at one point in my life, I worked for an alcoholic, and I delivered parts at the time, and they actually sent me home because I show up at work, I still be drunk from the night before if I've been out partying, But when I was a senior in high school, a guy had turned me on to some cross tops, and the cross tops was the start of amphetamines, right? So that would relieve. So it went from that to cocaine to methamphetamine. And I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but there's just goes from 3 cocktails to the craziness. And so anyway, back to By the time I was 32, I had 4 DUIs. I was already on my second marriage, and I was what you would call a weekend warrior, and I had worked my way up to in a fairly good job, and I was drinking on weekends and doing a lot of cocaine, and it was becoming a problem within the family, and my wife at the time, we're no longer together at the time, she was just doing everything she could to save the marriage. And I didn't really know how she had some issues as well. I really didn't know what they were, but I told her, "Hey, I'm working. I got my shit together. You're the one with the problems. I think you need to go seek some help." So I said, "Hey, let's get you into some counseling and see what's going on." So she went into the counselor and said, "Hey, my husband's doing a bunch of dope, blah blah blah. He's running around with a bunch of crazy people." So they get together and decide they're going to do an intervention on me. And so they go and get a guy from the community here that everyone knows, and he's a dear friend of mine. But they went to my they went to my folks, and they went to my employer, and so it was October 25th, 5:30 a.m. The night before, I was drinking at Loblaws. I can't remember if it was the World Series or if it was playoffs. But I was down there having a few beers. Nothing really. Out of normal, it wasn't too crazy. I got home fairly early. I had to get up and work the next day, I thought. That was a Tuesday night. And 5:30 in the morning, I get a little tap on my leg. And as I wake up, my boss is sitting there saying, "Hey, come on out in the front room. We want to talk to you." And I said, "What the heck is going on?" And as you can, I was shocked and leaving around and around, and finally I went out there. My whole family's there, my wife's family's there, my kids. It was real emotional, and we went around and around and around, my employer said, "Hey, if you're thinking about moving up and being part of this company and having a future, you need to go do the 28 days. I didn't really have any idea. No one had ever talked to me about my drinking. I knew I'd gotten in trouble. They put me, I've been on court cards, 5 times. I would go in and say, "Hey, I don't drink every day. I only drink on weekends. I do not have a problem. There's no alcoholism in my family. You guys are crazy. I'll do the deal." And like I said, I would overcome. I would work through my way through it. I'd straighten up and gradually didn't have a problem. And, that's why it was so tough for me to get in here and accept. And become willing, I had to lose everything. And that's eventually what's going to happen here. But, so they send me away. They get up, I finally make my decision. I say, "Can I have a cup of coffee?" And they fix me a cup of coffee. And as I come out of my living room, my wife sets 2 suitcases down right there. They took me straight out of the house, in a car, straight to the airport, and flew me to rehab. And I was in shock. So it started at 5:30. By 10:30, I was in front of rehab. No idea really what was going on. Still in my mind thinking, "Why would you guys do this to me?" Yada, yada, yada. And so I went into the deal, and it took them. They came at me and came at me and came at me. I didn't want to. There was just no way, And finally they came at me. My kids, I finally said, "Hey, whatever you need me to do." And I really kind of gave in, the facility I was at was a top notch. We know my family's not wealthy, but they said, "Hey, if we're going to do this to Brad, let's send him to one of the best." They did. I had insurance because I'm a worker, so I went to a fairly reputable, one of the top of the line we have at the time, So I came home, and just despite, I thought everybody was looking at me, my employer, they're all watching me. I stayed sober for 5 years, and my life got wonderful on the outside. I wanted to drink, and I was pissed because someone had stopped me from drinking. I had no release. I wanted to feel that the effect. And everyone's partying and playing around me, and I'm 30. I think I was 32 years old when it happened. I'm right in my prime of my life. Why would you do that? I want to drink. And it took it took the first 2 years for the Friday night and the Saturday night would call me. I mean, I would sit home and just, man, I want to go. I want to. There's life going on out there, and I'm miserable, and I'm miserable. And so finally I had to drink. So in 2000, I had acquired, I had moved my way up in the company. I had acquired property. I had the wife. I had the kids, the dogs, the vehicles, and I couldn't drink. And I had to drink because I didn't come in here on my own. They forced me into it, and I was pissed. I was still pissed 5 years later. And I just didn't. I was shamed in a way, and I thought, what are they going to say if I drink? But I learned to play golf, and I started playing golf, and I knew one of my customers that played golf, and I knew he did a lot of other things as well. So here I am playing golf with him. And so 5 years later, somewhere around 2000, the spring of 2000, I'm playing golf, and I decide I'm going to have a beer. And by the time I drink that beer, I don't know if it was later that day. I want to say it might happen that same day. If not, I know within a week or two, I was doing other things. And I went from cocaine into the methamphetamine. And once I got on that, it was just crazy. So that was 2000. By 2005, my wife, it's just getting more and more crazy at this time. I want to say probably 2005, I had a $100 a day habit. And I started off eating it, and then I was snorting it and smoking it. And so it started with the drinking, and I ended up doing this. And this is just part of my story. And so I was probably doing $100 a day for the course of that. Taking everything. I'm robbing Peter to pay Paul, and I'm starting to lose things. I'm starting to get crazy. I'm running with crazy people. Crazy things are starting to happen to me. And I'm not buying them. I'm doing purchases that are scary, and I'm with scary people. And things are just getting out of hand. I had tried to straighten up once or twice, and she, my wife at the time, had helped me. And finally, by 2005, she just said, "Hey, you are out of control. You're off the hook, and I'm not going to be around here because you're fixing to come unwound, and I don't want to be here." So she ended up moving out of town, getting a job, and you can't have a marriage. I don't believe you can have a marriage long distance. It's kind of definitely hard. And she went that way, and I went this way, and my life even got crazier. So by 2007, I had moved my connection in, and things were getting really crazier and crazier. And my job is starting to lose it. They eventually come to me and say, "Hey, you need to either resign or we're going to fire." And so resigned, and right after that, I took off, and the ball was off my chain. I had this divorce by then, and it even got crazy, and I had a fifth wheel travel trailer, and I ended up moving it out to Ivanhoe, because I'd done a lot of business in Ivanhoe, and Ivanhoe is where the devil lived, and I was sleeping with the devil. And as soon as I got out there, I just got in all kinds of war trouble, and I ended up getting arrested for under the influence of controlled substance two different times. They wouldn't leave me alone. Once they knew what I was doing, they were on me all the time. Wherever I drove, if they saw me, they pulled me over, and it was just crazy, you know. And so once again, this time I'm out of the job, and I'm losing all my finances. It's all dwindling. It's taking. And I know I got to do something because things are just, I can't live like this anymore. So I call one of my old bosses. He's in Oregon at this time. He says, "Brad, come up here. I'll put you to work." So I try to clean up. I said, "Now I got to go do this again." And I'm approaching, I think, 45 years old by this. I take off. I take my motor home, my fifth wheel, pull it up to Oregon, and I get up there, and I start doing real well, but I'm up there by myself, and I'm alone, so what do I do at night? and go to the bars. So here's Friday and Saturday night comes. I was up there for a few months. I started doing real well in my sales, and I hit some awards, and hey, I'm going to go out and celebrate. So I go to a bar. By this time, I'd already found some people that were doing some of the things that I like to do, so I'm already up in the mix. And I meet a little friend, and I'm out driving her home about 3 a.m., and I get one more DUI in the company car. And they haul me in. And this time, it's really, really tough to get out. And I couldn't do it. I had to finally, I tried everything I could to lessen it, and I couldn't. I had to call my boss in. I was called to come to Jesus meeting, and so we met, and they said, hey, you can't, you know, your situation here. They took my driver's license by this time. So I load all my stuff up in my travel trailer, and on the way home, I stick my travel trailer at Salem, Oregon. I put it on consignment, and I just said, sell it. Coming home into California, and I don't, when I get into California, I don't go to my family. I don't go to anyone that'll help me. I come to Farmersville to where my connections are at. And it even gets worse. So, within a few months, I let someone drive my car. He got on my truck. He got pulled over. My car got impounded. My truck had got impounded. I lost my so I'm on the street. Walking. So I'm living on it. It's in the spring or summertime. It's not really cold yet, but I'm on foot. And I'm still a mess, and it's just getting worse, and it's just getting worse. And eventually I end up, through some friends that I knew that had sold a house that lost a home, and I had business with them, and they said, hey, you can stay here. And so somewhere around October 2008, I was on a couch in a house. I can see the house in my mind today, and I was up. 155 pounds. I'm 205 today. And if you're around here long enough, you hear us talk about a gift of desperation. And so I remember at one point the power was turned off and everything, but I would sit up on that couch and light that. I had a Bic lighter. I smoked at the time. Marlboro lights, Bic lighter, pipe, bug spray. And I would turn, flick that lighter on, and there'd be cockroaches everywhere on this floor. You know, and I never ever want to forget that part. Anyway, went long after that. I made some phone calls. I had a lady that I had owed money to, so she always kind of had kept track of me because we had done some business before in a different manner, She was really kind and a friend, and she ended up coming and picking me up. Took me over to her house and let me stay on her couch. Took me in to court, and I made a court date because I have warrants for my two 11-550s. And I came in, and they put me in a Prop 36 program. I don't know if that is... to write a lower level board drug case, a drug court. And so I had to go pee in a cup two or three times a day. And I did that for 2.5 years, and that's how my recovery started. And so as 2009 came around, I'm in Prop 36. I'm trying to do everything I can. The willingness is there. That gift of desperation happened. I'm 155 pounds, and I remember my old life, and I just want it back. I just want my life back. Not all the bad stuff, but I want to be able to go shopping. I haven't been in the mall. You know, I did all my shopping at Walmart or the thrift stores or whoever would give me what. I couldn't even remember. I had never been out to dinner. I hadn't played golf in 3 or 4 years. And I just said, man, if you give me another opportunity, I'll do everything I can, and things just started coming together. She would take me to the Alano Club in the morning. I started going to the Alano Club every morning for the morning meeting, and on certain days she would take me to. I didn't have This was 2009, at the end of 2008, 2009. The economy was terrible. There was no jobs out there. Nobody was hiring. So she would take me down to Labor Ready at 5:30 in the morning. I would stand in line at Labor Ready and with a bunch of other guys looking for work. And because I'm a salesman, so I sell industrial parts. So it's a small business, and once you get a reputation of doing what I was doing, you're a liability. So I didn't think anybody would hire me. So I'm standing in line, and they put me to work stacking chairs at the convention center. Was my first job. So I'm 45 years old, and I'm humping chairs and tables, and they're paying me $10 an hour. And I used to make three or four times that an hour. But I was just grateful because it was starting to come back. There's a lot of young kids in there, 19, 20 years old. I'm a 45-year-old man. I'm humping them, and I'm out humping them because I just got a drive in me. I got to do this. I want my life back. I want it back really, really bad. So next thing I know, I'm starting to look on the internet for jobs. My old company comes up there looking for an inside salesman. I was an outside salesman. I went ahead and contacted them. They called me and said, hey, we'd like to interview you again. I go back to that same company that had asked me to leave. I put a suit on. I had one of my suits that I had kept in my travel trailer. I threw it in a suitcase, and I had hauled it all the way back. But yeah, I put that suit on. I'd been going to the Alano Club every day. They had been signing my tag. I had a stack of tickets of these court cards. And I went in there and said, hey, this is what I did. This is how I'm fixing it. This is what's going on in my life. And these rascals turned around and hired me back. That's really one of the second or third God shots. You don't find companies that ask you to leave to hire you back. You just don't. And I don't know if it was maybe because they saw something in me anyway. So I thought, well, you guys didn't give me a shot. I'm going to do everything I can. And so I went back to work. And I worked for this company for about a month. And one of the competitors, where a lot of my friends had already had went to, these guys had hired me at a low, low level and at a low, low price. And this other company called me and said, hey, you want to come to work for us? And they like tripled. They paid me for a while. It was kind of worth. And as soon as I went ahead and made the move. And with a year after that, that company that I went to work for bought this other company. And so miracles have just been happening ever since. My life is just straight, just taking off. And all the things that I had lost have been given back to me times 10. And so I'm coming up on 13 years. The first 4 years, I was rebuilding my life. The second 4 years, I was taking care of my mom. So my mom and my wife now. So I started on this couch. I went from this couch to rent her room. I rented that room, and it wasn't, I don't know how long it was to rent her whole house. Then we moved in. My mom was about 89. She was starting to fail, and I moved in there, and we took care of my mom because I just want to keep her safe. And it was part of that living again because I was feeling, there was times I was crazy. I was crazy with my mom, and so the whole, all the time that I was sober, I was trying to get back to her. Everything's been about her. So, in 2016, she passed. And so, in 2015, we had to put her in a rest home. And I'd go up there two or three times a week. It was in Tulare. I'd drive up there after work, sit down, and she had dementia. Pretty bad, but she always remembered, me for some reason. For some reason, she got up one night, and she was in a wheelchair, and she thought she could walk, crushed her hip, and it was too much to do. We couldn't put her through her parents, so we called in hospice, and I slept on that floor. And I got up and held her hand. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous. And just grateful for that. That's part of the recovery. So that was the second 4 years. And then around 2017, Bill came to me, and I ended up going into, I ended up being asked by my sponsor. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. He asked me to go into Pine on a panel, and I went in and shared a little bit of it. And it kind of really touched me, and I thought, man, this is pretty good. I'm kind of, this is a wonderful feeling. And I ended up going over to the Lionel Club, and there was a business meeting there, and it was an H&I business meeting. And I listened to what they said, and I had a lot of fear about going into the facilities, and I went ahead and left, and Bill called me about 15 minutes after I left. He said, hey, what do you think? Would you like to go into the facilities and do some of this? I said, well, I got all kinds of crazy questions, man. I don't know if I could do this. Oh, yeah, you can, you know. So, anyway, we go through the process of cleaning all my stuff up. I had to write things, and he helped me all the way, and they got me a cleanse, and so they start the first time. It's okay. Hey, we're going into Corcoran, and so I'm thinking they're going to take me into level one or level two. No. First shot out, boom, right into level four. You know, and we go in, and this guy's very, very impressive in that kind of setting. He really gets back, and it just took off of me. I loved every minute of it. And so I started, I made a commitment. I started doing H&I. I started going back in. So for the next, until COVID came along, I was going into the facilities and giving back and sharing a little bit. So as you guys heard from this morning, at the start of that month, how my life is today. It's full. Why would I want to go? Why would I want that feeling again? Why would I want to chase that? Why would I want to go do all that? I don't know, but it's cunning, it's baffling, and it's powerful. It scares me. Sometimes one of my shows was one of the cop shows, and when I see that stuff on the television now, it's just like giving me goosebumps, you know. So that life was crazy, but then it'd be all gone like that, you know. So I get to go to conventions, and I get to go do, he got me involved in the Sober Fest deal, and it's giving back, and I'm at a place now in my life where I can give back, and my life's good. Okay. I'm on, you're out. So, I think that's enough, but. Hope you got something out of it.
Who needs Pat from Fullerton, huh?
We love Pat from last night, but Bradley's got a very powerful story. I'm glad he was able to share some of that. You know, I got to be present for an experience that moved me. Brad talked about going into the prison, and some of those facilities are still closed, and we're working on getting people back in there, but you know, when I started going out there, I had this idea, this notion that I was going into the prison to save the people there, right? To serve them, you know. Somehow I'm some kind of got something they need, and I've just been humbled to find that most of the time when I'm in service, I'm the one that's getting the benefit, right? It just so happened, it was a funny coincidence, but Brad celebrated 10 years on the night of his commitment out at SATF, and so we had the inmates present him with his 10-year chip, and that was that moved me. That was a pretty cool thing. Okay, so we are now starting the discussion portion of the meeting. We'd like to hear from as many people as possible, so just keep that in mind as you're using the time. We're going to go ahead and go back to Brad. There's a list of names. We've got online folks and people here in person. Mike is a recorder. He's audio only, so he can't he won't be able to speak to us, but everybody else that you should be able to choose from. And if you want to just kind of go back and forth between them. So we'll let Brad go ahead and do that.
I see my girl Leah there. Is she on? Leah?
Oh, she's gone.
She's gone. She done me wrong. Okay, how about... You guys want to go, when you guys start here, we'll go back and forth from Zoom to over here, and you want to start, or whichever.
I'll start. My name's Erica.
Hi, Erica.
Thank you so much for your care. I feel like I, you know, I've been here on just in a lot of ways. So I was trying to get the desperation, and I was really desperate, and I was really afraid. And fear kind of kept me sober for like 3 months, so I really started getting into the steps with a serious sponsor, and, you know, being held accountable to just basically meeting with my confidence in the steps. I'm going back to the steps. Right now I'm on step 3. And, you know, it's just basically, what my kids, my life over, to the will of God, and, you know, our higher power, which I mean, I guess I call God, but it's just plenty of people in my life right now, you know, out there in my using and drinking, it was self-will and riot. I was just constantly in peril, you know, even before I had it for treatment. Alcohol really had just running laps around the people in my life, like they're trying to figure out what's going on with me, like, why is your life always so chaotic, you know? How come you can't just drink, you know, like, your brother or your sister, and just kind of have a normal time, instead you're, you know, trying to see it before you got the door. You know, showing up, you're drunk, crying about something, you're calling your sister, you know, just really making a fool out of myself, and you know, until I had really reached the depths of disparity, I did not realize that alcohol was a big problem for me. But when I look back on my experience, you know, it was a huge problem. So alcohol is not just really saving for myself in any way. And, you know, I can still, in sobriety, have moments where I'm chaotic, running on self-will, not trusting my higher power, not turning to my higher power for help throughout the day. and it causes a lot of problems in my life, you know, where I'm, like, getting back into those old habits, but I'm sober. So, you know, revisiting the steps, constantly with people, it really,
thank you. I see Stacy's there. Would Stacy like to share on Zoom?
Hi, yes, I'm Stacy, alcoholic. Glad to be here. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Thank you, Stacy.
Hi, yes, thank you so much for your share. It was very touching. As someone who's lost two parents young, I totally understand where you're coming from. I think the fact that you had to get to a place that was beyond rock bottom to be able to be there for your mom towards her end is really important. If you wouldn't have been sober, you wouldn't have had the courage to be there, because when we're in fear as alcoholics, a lot of times, every time it seems we use, you know, that's our blanket, our comfort blanket.
Absolutely.
Every time that you're in that spot, that's your comfort blanket. And I know that as far back as I go with abusing alcohol, even at a young age, you know, I was 19 when we lost our mom 3 days before Christmas. And even facing that, I'm like inside her place packing stuff, drinking whiskey, you know, to get through that. And not even doing everything like I'm supposed to in that sense at the time. And then a few years later, we lost our dad, whom I took off life support. He was a suffered from multiple sclerosis. And, you know, with autoimmune diseases, after a while, you end up accumulating a few more things. And I still handled stuff, but I know that if I would have been totally sober, I would have handled things a lot differently. So I don't want to make it all just about that, though, and the negative part of that, because at this point in my life, I am doing what I'm supposed to be doing with and for family and working on family history and photo albums, making sure that people are getting some of the memories that they deserve as well. Or, you know, I don't know who a lot of people are in a lot of the photos I have and whatnot. So it's really interesting to finally hear other people's sides and spark that interest in an older person to share a story with me, too. So I'm Stacy. Thank you so much for letting me speak.
Thank you, Stacy.
Welcome.
I can relate in a lot of ways. That desperation point that I hit is like a rock bottom per se. I really didn't understand what rock bottom was. I've got a few episodes with a few different things. You know, but I thought rock bottom was, you know, wandering around the street on a bicycle or walking with nothing. Everybody that turned me away, in and out of jail, and just have no family or friends. You know, this last time, you know, I had my kids, I had my wife, you know, I had a home, and money in my pocket, I had a vehicle, but rock bottom was, my 5-year-old son, my daddy, why he was sick. You know, I suffered from alcoholism and other substances.
Right.
You know, I was heroin addict, cocaine, pretty much all of the above, train wreck. You know, roller coaster. But when my 5-year-old comes to me and asks me why I'm always going up in the backyard, I'm either hung over or I'm sick from heroin, that was my rock bottom. That's when I hit a point of desperation. That's when I cried to God like I've never cried to God before. You know, of course, I'm not everybody. I can't speak for anybody else but myself. Go to jail.
You were on your phone or something.
You know, like, pray to God, you know, it says, yeah, you're not going to do these things again. And that never helped me ever. You know, but my daughter asking me why I was sick, you know, and I want my dad back. And you know, I was there and I was like, I had money in my pocket and all these things, you know, and I was like, this is a rock bottom. You know, this is my rock bottom. Enough is enough. You know, instead of prayer to God that day. And I got to a point where I didn't know which direction to go, so I tried recovery, you know, I tried praying, I tried, you know, like when I go to jail, you know, getting into the Bible and doing all these things and not going to do the same thing. And none of it ever worked. So I got to a point where I was like getting suicidal. And then I was trying to bring my kids through this pain. You know, straight putting through pain, knowing that I was doing it, but I wasn't doing anything about it. So I got to a point where I thought, well, you know, if I can't, I'm not going to stop. I'm going to at least get out of their lives. I'll just go and jump off a bridge somewhere. You know, go just, you know, I'm going to end myself so they don't have to suffer. And I prayed to God to give us some kind of sign. You know, and within seconds, my daughter came out the back door, and I'm also quite defiant, you know. And she told me straight up, it was my third time there. She'd been there. She said, "Dad, why don't you go back to defiant? I know you're not fine. You're my dad. You know, so I know you're not going to be sick no more." You know, I didn't see it that instant, and she started crying, I started crying, she said, "That might be," she wiped tears off my face, and she's like, "I want my daddy back." you know, and then realize, you know, that's not a sign. That's a sign from God. I got on the phone and I called Director Klein and he was like, I've been waiting for your call. I'm going to get you right over here. If you can call me again, let's get right next time. You know, but that is since I realized, you know, you don't have to be out here homeless on the street, burying with nothing to hit a rock bottom. You got everything in the world and you didn't have that rock bottom.
Yeah.
You know, this run, you know, through recovery, sobriety, my big book, my sponsor, it's even an entirely different picture. You know, I've read the book 4 times, and I'm still getting stuff out of it that I've never seen before. You know, every time I read through the book, you know, I read it, the first 2 times I read it, and it's like, okay, I read that. This time, it's like, wow, I didn't even see this part. You know, I got brothers in recovery that I'll send texts to and whatnot, and when things jump out at me, it's like, wow, alright, this is deep. It's really guilty, you know, and it's really, there's really truth in that book. And it's really simple. You know, I always was a bit of a complainer and procrastinator on getting into my steps, getting into the book, but that's my morning meditation right there, every day. You know, and it truly is simple. You know, I sit down, I turn on some gospel, and I get into my book, and I just dissect it. And it's not like I'm even dissecting it anymore. It's like it's speaking to me. You know, it really is. You know, I'm very grateful today to for Alcoholics Anonymous, my higher power, you know, and for another chance at life.
Right on. Thank you, Dave.
Sure.
Leah, are you you on, girl?
So Leah, I'm alcoholic. Sorry about that. I my baby was going crazy. I couldn't find her bottle. I left it in my sister's car.
I want to say thank you one more time for your service yesterday. You knocked it out of the park, kiddo. You worked your butt off. So thank you.
Thank you. You helped a whole bunch. It was a team effort. It really was. You know, I am grateful for everybody. Without everybody, I wouldn't be able to do it. I would have freaked out. Just like I do, because that's what I do. But I honestly surprised myself, you know. But it was a great experience. It really was. Looking forward to New Year's. You know, I can't wait to start that planning meeting. you know, that reminds me, I'm alcoholic. But I just. Rock, thank you for your share, Brad. I only heard pieces of what I could hear. She started screaming a little too loud. I had to get off. But I did hear you talking about, you know, where you've been, and you've been a lot of places, buddy. Garden Block, woo! Yeah, I've been there on a couch.
Yeah,
and in a abandoned house. You know.
Yep.
Yeah, that's crazy. So I can identify with that feeling, that loneliness, that craziness. That's one of the times where I was drinking a lot too. It really was. It was crazy. We drank and they popped pills and I drank more, and I ended up drinking myself into a miscarriage. Then, you know, and that was hard. You know, but and I used to always tell myself I'm going to hell. You know what I mean? Because an abortion and a miscarriage due to the things that you were doing and the choices you were making, I was telling myself I'm going to hell. You know, no matter what I do, I'm going to hell. But it wasn't for this program and that book and the steps and the principles and the promises, you know, and everything as a whole, a fellowship. I honestly... I would still think that, you know, but I know I'm going to a better place. I know I'm in a better place. That's for sure. I definitely am in a better place, a happy place. Yeah. I find myself when I get mad. It's funny because I still 2 seconds later I'll be happy. You know, singing and dancing and stuff, It's all thanks to this program, like, really, it really is, because drinking and me is no bueno. We don't mix. I'm either beating somebody up or being a hoe. What was that?
You need to stay sober then.
What was it, right? You sure have. But I just, I'm raising this baby too. You know, this is out of five kids. She's had me her whole life. I can't say that for the other ones, but I see the differences in them and in her, and it's great. It's major difference. You know, she's been raised in this program, and that's one of the wonderful things in the world. Yes. You know, especially for her, she's he was literally born in these rooms. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy. On the 26th will be the day where I stopped drinking and using when I was pregnant with her. And so she'll have her, what, her 2 years on the 26th, which is cool.
Right on.
Congratulations, Leah.
You got it.
Yeah, she's a cutie. But, I'm just, I'm very grateful for this program and everything. And I just want to tell Dave, if you don't come make his coffee, I'm going to be really mad this Wednesday. But, it's good to see him and, his girl, you know, together and doing their recovery thing. It brings hope, you know, to us all. You know, no matter how far you get off, you can always get back on. You can always bounce back. That boomerang, you know, keep coming back. I've seen a lot of people at the event this weekend, and I was like, dang, I wasn't expecting to see as many people, let alone everybody. I got to meet some people that I only met online, which was pretty cool, too, you know. Put the faces to the phone faces. I was kind of like, I know you. Yeah. You know, that was pretty cool. And I even got a tip, a raffle ticket too.
Yeah.
From Jack. And it was really good. It felt good. And I just can't wait for the next event. And I can't wait for Wednesday so I can get back up there at that podium and do my secretary thing.
Right.
I'm just grateful for today. That's all I got.
Right on, Leah. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brad.
You know, real quick, a couple things that I failed to mention was the higher power has been a big part in my life during the whole thing. And I do meditations in the morning, and I get down on my knees every chance that I get. I try to start my day off that. And I just ask him to guide my thoughts and my words and my actions, and I pray over my kids. And I got a Papa shirt on, and I'm a grandpapa. So I got this from, I have three grandkids, and they're my world. And I meant to spend a few minutes on them, but I'm kind of rusty doing this. I haven't done it in a while, but I wanted to share that part. So, Dave, you want to share a little bit?
Thank you, Brad. Your stories are really quite different. But what I heard, we are exactly similar, is, you know, I got to that point of hopelessness. That was just, and I had tried to stop on my own, and I found that I was unable. But I didn't get into this program. You know, I heard that you all have a plan. The plan involves a book. I can read a book. The book has steps. I can follow steps. You told me I needed a sponsor, so I got that sponsor. My sponsor told me, I want you to get into service. Every opportunity for service that comes up, I want you to take it. And so your story of Patient I, that's one of those opportunities for service. And in helping others, we help ourselves. And I started to do some H&I stuff. I've been out to corporate once. Now, my step work wasn't as solid as it needed to be. And for some strange reason, they don't want people who relapsed recently to be in front of those inmates. I have a rule. But I do hope to get back to that.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah, your story, your share always has, it seems to me that the new craze right now is death and weight.
Mm-hmm.
And you may hear that more share every time.
You're a lot smarter than me, Dave. So who else we got online? We have, is there Stephanie? Would Stephanie like to share? Is she still on?
Let's see. Yeah, Stephanie's still on.
Stephanie, would you like to share?
Present. Yeah. We have a Cassie, but she doesn't have the audio connected. She.
So Christopher, you want to share a little bit? Bill, you want to speak?
Man,
share a little bit.
Christopher, man, you freaking hosed me, man. I was gonna have a few more minutes to make some shit up.
No, you know, it's kind of funny. I mentioned Brad and I went to high school. I don't think we really knew each other in high school, but we did go to the same high school about close to the same time. And where I really connected with Brad was at those Lana Club meetings in the morning. We used to see each other there all the time for years. You know, this is kind of a goofy deal, but sometimes I tend to forget some like really important things. I mean, one of the really important things that I've heard a lot of people say they forget is, you know, that they can't safely drink, right? And then we go drink again. But I forget other stuff too. I forget, for example, some of the things that have happened in my life in this process of recovery. And I begin to kind of, I don't know, get a little distance from the miracles that have happened in my life. And I start to think that maybe I really haven't, you know, my life hasn't changed that much, you know? Those thoughts cross my mind. And the crazy thing is that one of the best ways for me to be present with how my life has changed and how it continues to change is to continue to interact with especially people that are newer in the process, right? Because what happens is I see a reflection of myself. And if you've ever been somebody that I've been angry with, I can promise you it's because you do shit that I do. Because there's few things in life that will upset me more than when I see other people doing things that I don't like that I do. You know what I mean? I remember when he wasn't my first sponsor, right? So I did what probably a lot of us do. I came here and I thought, you know, I don't need this sponsor thing. I don't need these steps. I don't need any of that stuff. I mean, I understand you need that stuff. But I clearly possess some exceptional capabilities and I'm not going to need that kind of help. But eventually I surrendered to your desire for me to have a sponsor. And I said, okay. So I asked a guy, I think Danny McDee was my first sponsor. And I was scared to death to talk to this guy, man. He was, at a meeting I went to with some friends and my friends, these were non-alcoholic friends.
that took me to an AA meeting because they were worried about me. You know, that says a lot if you think about it. I mean, how many of us alcoholics take our friends to meetings? I mean, some of us do, sure, when we're on our good hair day, right? But anyway, these guys that were not alcoholics took me to a meeting because they knew that my life depended on it. And there was this guy, Danny, and he said something in the meeting that I thought was, I don't know, I probably thought he was clever. And so I was scared to death to go ask this guy because it felt like I was asking him to go with me, right? Maybe to the prom or something, you know? It's like, it just felt weird, right? And I thought, man, if I picked the wrong guy, I'm going to be stuck with him for the rest of my life, you know? And that frightened me. But, you know, what do we say? The pain of the flame underneath my ass got to be great enough that I became willing to do something different. And so I asked this guy, Danny, to sponsor me. Danny was, he was a rigorous fellow. He wanted me to call him every day. That's some bullshit right there, man. I don't know about you. I don't call my girlfriend every day. And so what I did was I started calling Danny at like 10:30 at night because I knew he had a morning job. Right? See? Because I knew he wouldn't want to stay on the line very long. And you know the crazy thing is Danny was just sick enough that he never let my call go to voicemail. And he never acted like he was, tired or out of time. He was a better man than I am. I'm not that good of a man today. I'm really not. I turn my phone to silent when I go to bed, so sorry about that, y'all. You know, I'm an 8-to-5 kind of guy, you know. I'm exaggerating a little bit. But anyway, Danny wanted to talk all the time, and that was just crimping my style, so I came up with some excuse for why I couldn't relate to Danny. And Danny connected me to a guy named Terry. Terry, at first I thought, you know, we could connect on a few topics. Like I've heard tonight, I'm not a purist. I got more than one problem, you know? And so, Terry had, one of my other problems. And so I thought, well, this is going to work out. And then Terry did some shit that I thought was pretty underhanded. He started like connecting with my family. And he started talking to some of my family members, and I didn't know what he was doing at the time. I know today what he was doing, and it's actually in the instructions in the book, right? We're told as members of Alcoholics Anonymous to get to know the family members of our fellows. And the reason that's important is to get a full picture of what's going on. Because, you know, if you come to me and ask me what's going on, and I'm still spun, man, I ain't about to tell you the truth. You know, you're not going to get the whole story. So Terry was getting more of the whole story. I thought he was like conspiring with my girlfriend against me, and so I had to fire his ass, you know. And I got rid of Terry, and I went alone for a while again. And my family and my girlfriend were really on me at the time about having a sponsor, going to meetings. So I ended up asking this guy Paul. And the reason I asked Paul was because his wife, Shelley, was a pretty lady, and she was in the program, too. And she came to me after a meeting one day, and she goes, you should ask Paul to be your sponsor. And I thought, anything a pretty girl asks me to do, I'm going to do. So I did. I asked her husband to be my sponsor. And Paul surprised me. Paul did a lot of things that I didn't expect. He didn't follow me around. He didn't chase after me. He basically said, hey, if you want what I have, I'm happy to give it to you, but you're going to have to come get it. And he'd give me assignments. He'd say, hey, I want you to read this, and I want you to answer these questions. And when you get done with that, it's your responsibility to call me and make an appointment and come back and review that work with me. It's not my job to chase you around. And I kind of liked that because it was the opposite of Danny, who wanted me to call him every damn day, right? And he wasn't getting all in my business like Terry was getting in my family business, you know. Paul was just kind of being there. And so he was less of a threat to me. And I don't know why, but for some, well, I, you know, I guess I do. The pain of the circumstances of my life at that time motivated me to consider doing something different. And if you want to know the truth,
I did not jump into this sponsorship thing or these 12 steps. I did not jump into this idea as a way to change my life for the better. It's not what happened. What I did was I said, hey, check this out. You got this out. I'm going to do what this cool Paul says just to prove his shit don't work, and then I can go do what I want. That was my motivation. And so Paul gave me two questions to answer, and maybe like the first 30 pages in the book, something like that. He didn't tell me when to finish it. He just said, let me know when you're done. And I made a commitment to him that I would hold a piece of paper and a pencil every night for at least 5 minutes. And there were some nights. I mean, okay, I'm a technicality guy. I told him I would hold a pencil and a piece of paper for 5 minutes.
Yeah, right.
There were a couple of nights I did just exactly that. But more often than not, I did what he suggested. I answered the two questions. That was pretty quick and easy, really. After that, I just started, he gave me some instruction. He said, write about what challenges you face today, what went well today, you know, write about whatever the hell's going on. And I started writing, and I held that commitment for over 10 months. And in that period of time, it was the strangest damn thing. There were nights when I would write something, and I would go back and I would read it, and I would think, well, holy damn, I never thought of it that way. And I'm like, where did that come from? I just had no idea where these things that I was writing was coming from. And the other thing that I noticed in that period of time was that my boss seemed to be a little less bossy, right? My coworkers seemed to be a little less annoying. My customers were a little less demanding. My family seemed to be a little less critical. I mean, we talk about this like pink cloud thing, right? Where I think what we're trying to describe is that like all of the pain points in our life starts to kind of lessen, and it starts to feel almost euphoric in a way, right? Because there's this lack of all these pins poking you. And so life starts to get kind of better. And so I'm kind of thinking, okay, well, I'll just keep doing what I'm doing. And Paul would give me an assignment. I would read things. I'd write a little bit. I'd make an appointment with him. We'd go over it. And things just kept going well. And now, I say things went well. I was 8 months sober, and I got laid off from a job. That doesn't sound like so things going so well, does it? I mean, ordinarily, a person would be pretty upset about that. And, you know, the damnedest thing, I can still remember the day that I got the phone call. It was early morning. It must have been around this time of year because the temperature was about the same. It's kind of cool in the morning, right? And I remember going to the mailbox to get my mail. And on the way back, I got this phone call from my boss. And as she's telling me that I'm part of this current layoff series, I'm overcome with this idea that she's more upset about this than I am. And I actually am finding myself comforting her about letting me know that I don't have a job. And I don't know where shit like that comes from. I don't, because everything is all about me, right? And it's just crazy. I continued along that path, and I said I wrote every night for 10 months. I don't remember exactly why that streak stopped. And when I say I stopped, I didn't like abruptly stop and never do it again, but I didn't have a every single night experience that lasted beyond that. And in all candor, I'll tell you that, that I don't write every night today. What I find I do is when I get frustrated with whatever, family, work, life, whatever, that I know that I can pick up a pencil and within a very short period of time, those problems seem to just evaporate. And I don't know why or how it is that happens. I just know that it does. And I think that really kind of drives us home to the last point I'll make, and that is that I've heard it said that AA is it's an experience that we have.
it's not a theology, it's not a social practice, it's not a psychology program. It's something that we experience. And, Jen last night, our 10-minute speaker, I don't know if many of you know her very well. I've got the privilege of getting to know her because we go to a noon meeting every day. And over the last year, I've watched her come in brand new and go through the steps, and she's working with a sponsor. And I think she's working with a sponsee now too. And I've watched her change, and the circumstances of her life and the drama in her life changed from, oh my God, you know, all of these problems, everything's on fire, to, oh man, I got a term paper due, you know? I mean, we're always going to have problems. Bank on that, right? But whether you're, and I don't remember the specific details of her situation, but whether you're worried about your family leaving or you're being out of your house or your car being gone or whatever, or you're worried about a term paper, I mean, those are two cataclysmically different problems to have. And that's really been my experience here in AA. And I need people like Jen last night. I need people like Brad to remind me. My story started too, just like Brad described, that same bozo-ass school at AA and his merry band of sober people showed up at my house with a bunch of family members, and they encouraged me to go get help today. I like parties with bounce houses and ponies, man. I don't want those kind of parties. But anyway, hey, thanks for letting me share. Thanks for coming out,
Brad.
I think we've exhausted everyone here, so we're down to the end. Let me go ahead and give us some closing comments here. The Valley Group is a sponsorship and service to our fellowship.